This is Logan Seculo. It's a Logan Seculo reprogram takeover at JSecu Live, and you guessed it, we're talking about the fallout from the first debate.
Live from Washington, D.C., JSecu Live.
You didn't want me to ban China, which was heavily infected. You didn't want me to ban
Mr. President.
You're talking about 2 million people.
Mr. President, as the moderator.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
That's not what they're talking about, Chris. That's not what they're talking about. He's talking about defunding the police.
That is not true.
He doesn't have any law support. He has no law enforcement.
That's not true.
Almost nothing.
Look.
Roy, who do you have? Name one group that supports you. Name one group that came out and supported you. Go ahead. Think. We have time.
We don't have time to do anything.
No, think about it. Name one law enforcement group.
I think I'm going to take back the moderator's role.
And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to the one and only flag-waving, God-praising, trail-blazing, heck-raising radio show takeover of JSecu Live. This is Logan Seculo. I'm here with my buddy Will Haynes, one of the producers here. And guess what we're talking about? The fiery but mostly peaceful debate. You may have seen it last night. Probably you did, though the early ratings are coming in. Not great. So we're going to cover that. We're going to take phone calls, assuredly, about your thoughts on this debate. One we will never forget. And we're going to be joined in the next segment by Rick Grinnell. He's going to come on and give us his analysis on that, as well as some other topics, Will. But I think we got to get straight to it. The night kicked off with a bang. And if you want to know, because you got to go back and look, I think there's an interesting fact we need to start with, which was how the chaos started.
Right.
The originator. Because you may think it was Donald Trump, but actually the first person you said to interrupt to stop that 2 minute of uninterrupted behavior, supposed to have uninterrupted speeches and giving.
Uninterrupted.
That's probably the best way to say it. It actually got kicked off by Joe Biden.
That's right. So this was President Trump was talking about his nomination of Amy Coney Barrett.
Because we were texting, it was kind of boring. Yeah, it was very calm.
The first 10 minutes, like, this is a snoozer. Like there's not a lot of jazz.
Everyone
back
was
and
low
forth.
Talking. Yeah.
But then President Trump is talking, and this is bite five. Let's go ahead and play it because you'll hear who initiates the interruptions.
Okay, Justice Ginsburg said very powerfully, very strongly, at some point. 10 years ago or so, she said, a president and the Senate is elected for a period of time, but a president's elected for 4 years. We're not elected for 3 years. I'm not elected for 3 years. So we have the Senate. We have a president.
He's elected to the next
during
election.
During that period of time, we have an opening. I'm not elected for 3 years. I'm elected for 4 years. And 100 million people.
Election has already started. A comment that got kind of, should have actually had gotten a little more attention.
Fact checked
because he said, you're elected till the next election. Well, we all know that's not how this works. And after that, it went crazy. But yeah, that was the first initial takeoff point. You know, there's going to be a lot of fire thrown at President Trump. And look, it was a very chaotic night. And if we want to walk away from this saying, there was clear winners and losers, and then you may be playing a little too close.
I have a clear loser, though. I think there was one clear loser. That was the moderator.
Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace. Epic fail, Chris Wallace. What a disaster. I don't think he asked a substantive question the entire time. A lot of theoreticals, a lot of thrown out, and then would not take control. Would try, but would fail miserably. So I do feel like Chris Wallace does not come out of this looking good. And the whole night was just a mess. I thought it was going to get corrected. There was one moment like, okay, now we're on the right track. And then it went to chaos kind of again from both sides. And we're going to talk about that more when we get back. Phone lines are lighting up, of course. We want to hear from you because what matters is what you have to say to the American people. 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. When we get back from the break, we'll be joined by Rick Grinnell. He's going to give us his thoughts, Will, not only on the debate, but on a couple other topics
as
well.
Yeah, a new letter from the Director of National Intelligence that was sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee. You're going to learn about that in the next segment as well.
And I think a few of our listeners probably have seen that. You've probably seen it floating around the internet. You may have questioned its validity, but we're going to talk about that because it's a pretty big deal. We'll be right back on Logan Seculo Reprogram Takeover.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Logan Sekulow. It's a Logan Sekulow reprogrammed takeover, Will. And we're going to be joined a little bit later by Rick Grinnell, but I think he's connecting here shortly. So we'll discuss a little bit more of this debate that happened. As we said in that first segment, it got kicked off. The first 10 minutes or so, both of us were texting back and forth and being like, okay, you know, I don't know. It's not a ton of substance, but, you know, it's good. They're calm. They're quiet. And then within 15 or 20 minutes after that, within the first hour, it had kind of broken off into chaos. And we've said chaos. And I've been looking through social media from both sides. Obviously, most of my friends, a lot of my friends, more lean on the conservative side. But I definitely have plenty of liberal friends. And they had a lot to say. But both, I think everyone kind of can agree that this is a very unique debate, one that we'll remember forever, and one that will not necessarily go down as a great debate in American history. It will be one that will be remembered for the disruption and the chaos.
Well, a couple takeaways I had were, one, I think that it was very much a picture of what you see on Facebook, what you see with the divisions in the country, that there were, especially in the analysis, the post-debate analysis, because there were people on both sides that would point to, I thought Biden did great and was really respectful and held his own, but Trump was terrible, and then vice versa. Trump was great. He was prepared. He had to fight against the moderator in that, but Biden was terrible. And I think that's just kind of the picture of where our two-party system is right now. There's a lot of division as far as policy, and I don't think that if you are a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter, you are necessarily swayed by that style of a debate.
And no, I don't think so.
On the moderator.
And I would say that not only are you not swayed, I think that all important vote right now, as you see, as your social media keeps telling you to register to vote, I'm sure most of our listeners have registered to vote, but for those that haven't, I think this was not a good thing for those who are not used to voting. This did not give you a good reason to go out to the polls. I think you watched it. You were probably confused, disturbed maybe, and there's probably some things that upset you. Obviously, the ratings are starting to come in, so we're starting to see how people respond. I think it's pretty interesting. But we are joined by Rick Grinnell, who is the Special Advisor for National Security and Foreign Policy, and obviously we all know Rick's connections and what's happening right now. Rick, I wanted to give you a chance to speak. Let us know what you thought about that debate last night. It was obviously one that many of us will not forget.
Yeah, no, it was definitely like a brawl. But You know, I just have to say, I watched it here in California with some of my neighbors who are liberals, far left, people who don't support Trump, couple who do support Trump, but mostly people who don't. And I have to tell you that there were a variety of women who are very concerned about law enforcement.
Yes.
And who felt like the real directness of President Trump saying, look, I am not going to put up with this. This is coming to the suburbs. And Joe Biden's inability to talk and articulate that he is focused on law and order. He couldn't say the word. He didn't know of any law enforcement official agencies that endorsed him. This rung really strong with these women. And I have to say, and after the debate, talking to them, a couple of them were just saying, you know, I'm getting nervous about the recklessness and the rioting, and I'm going to have to vote for safety and law enforcement. I think this is a winning issue for Trump. I think he hit it out of the park. Lastly, I'll just say this. I felt like, you know, the whole Biden message that he's presidential imploded because he is the one who lost his cool. Four times he said, you know, shut up,
right,
or you're a racist, or whatever.
Clown. Call him a clown.
Clown. Yeah. And we said he was actually the first person to interrupt. If you look where the interruption starts, where the chaos, you know, breaks out, is in those 2 minutes we're supposed to be uninterrupted. First person to break out of that was Joe Biden. But you brought up that law and order segment. And, well, when we were talking about this going back and forth, if you could isolate that 10 minutes or whatever it was about that, it was an excellent, I think, even debate just in general for both sides. I think they were not, I don't obviously agree with one side, but at least there was some interesting banter back and forth. There was some substance there. But I think President Trump did come out very strong in that moment because you had, as you said, a moment where when he couldn't name, Joe Biden could not name a police union or support that they backed him. Then you also had President Trump saying, you know, we have to stop this and we have to put an end to the riots. And I think that does resonate with a lot of people. It resonates with me as someone, as a family man in the suburbs. It does resonate. And I think that that was the moment. If I could just take out that 10 minutes, I think a lot of people, if you could isolate that 10 minutes and watch it, it would change a lot of people's minds on where the country should be headed.
Yeah, look, I think what we also have to remember is that Washington, D.C. is a mess. It's got its own rules. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden have been there for 40 plus years. They don't like the outsider and Donald Trump coming in. And so for 4 years, Donald Trump has been trained to be a fighter, and he's fighting for us. And right. So he's going to interrupt. He's going to push back. But if you play by the Washington rules, if you play by what they want you to do, then Republicans are super nice and we lose.
Yeah. I mean, I think you brought up a good point, which I heard some people comment like, well, it didn't really feel like that Trump was the incumbent here. Well, look at the situations he's been put in and look at the way the media has necessarily treated him and treated the whole administration. It's not like you're coming into a friendly audience and an incumbent 4 years. This is somewhat hostile territory, Will.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And I did want to move on a little bit from the debate, Rick, because there's another big news item that we have to hit. And I think we got to talk about it when you're here. Will, I'll let you set it up.
That's right. Last night, the director of national intelligence, a job that you're familiar with, I'm certain.
He
declassified a letter and sent it over to the Senate Judiciary Committee about allegations the intelligence agencies were aware of in 2016 that it was Hillary Clinton who approved the campaign plan to pin a collusion narrative between the president and Russia, and that even Obama was briefed on that by the CIA director Brennan, and also that Comey and Strzok may have had some insight into this. How important is this letter?
Changes
that came
the narrative
out?
Completely, Rick.
Yeah, look, this is incredibly important. We've been calling it from the beginning, and let me just be very clear with our listeners and viewers. From the very beginning of this Russian collusion narrative investigation, there were several career intelligence officials from the very beginning who looked at the information and said, I think Russia knows about this and is pushing propaganda into your investigations. You're taking this propaganda as if it's true. But they knew early on that the Russians were into the Steele dossier, into Hillary looking for dirt. And so what did they do? They fed into the Steele dossier and the Hillary Clinton opposition research. But here's the key. Our intelligence agency officials who run the CIA, Comey, and DOJ, and the FBI, all of these individuals knew that the Russians were pushing propaganda, and yet they didn't want that out there. They wanted Hillary and others to continue with these false narratives because it was negative against Trump. And so despite the fact that our intelligence officials knew that the disinformation was from the Russians from the beginning, they pretended like these were real hits by silencing those people, cautioning and saying, you know, hey, I have a red flag on this. This is Russian propaganda. Yeah. They took those comments from career intelligence officials, classified their comments, and filed them away. This came from the very top to dupe the American people. And to be honest, we don't know to this day if Hillary Clinton knew from the beginning that this was Russian disinformation. Either way, she ran with it. Our intelligence officials knew that she was pushing a false story, but they let it go because it was hits on Trump. And then they had all of this kind of hoax stuff put together to continue going after Trump, spying on his campaign. And the final point that I have to make is, when Trump won, when President Trump won, and we knew he was coming into the White House and we were supposed to have a peaceful transition, they got more aggressive going after Flynn and others because they didn't want a peaceful transition. They wanted to sully all of the Trump people. Right. And I think that's outrageous. People need to be held to account.
Absolutely, Rick. And I think this is the story that never ends. This is the ongoing Russia, you know, story that will, I feel like we'll go in 30 years from now, we're going to be like, oh, we found some new uncovered, unclassified documents, because it does feel like a story that we feel like has wrapped up three or four times now over the course of many years that now continues to unfold. And, you know, you brought up more of the debate stuff. I think it's true that you have to, you know, fight back. We have to have that person there, and you got to look at the policies. If you can watch that debate, if you had a problem with the style, whatever, but look at the policies and look if they match up to your personal worldview. And I think that is a big part. I'm curious of our listeners' thoughts on that, because beyond a fiery debate, you know, there are clear policy differences that I think a lot of us agree with, according to the president or Joe Biden. Well, we'll be right back. Thank you, Rick, for joining us. We appreciate it. We're gonna take some calls when we get back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
To the Logan Secular Reprogram Takeover J Secular Live. We're talking debate coverage. Thanks to Rick Grinnell for popping by online via Skype and chatting about the debates as well as a lot of fun Russia Hillary stuff. So
always fun.
Good. Always fun. I wanted to go straight to the phone calls because look, I think we're gonna be kidding ourselves if we're not gonna address that the debate was chaotic and was a bit crazy and had a lot of issues. Whether that be the moderators, whether that be the candidates. It was an intense night, and I really wanted to hear what you all have to say and let you speak. So I'm just going to go in order of wait time, Will. Let's go first to Scott. He's in Colorado.
Line two. Scott, you're on J Secular Live and the Reprogram Takeover. Welcome.
Okay. Yeah, guys. Hey, thanks for my call. Yeah, just my comment is that, you know, if what they say in boxing is true, that the best referees are the ones you don't know are there, then Wallace did an awful, atrocious job sticking his nose in when Trump was, I thought, getting really the upper hand. But I thought Trump was well-prepared anyway, knowing he was going against two opponents. But I think Wallace's tactic was to buy his interruptions to add to the kind of the appearance of Trump as a chaos candidate. But I think people saw through that. They know Trump is an integrated, solid leader, just like they know that it's the Biden voters in Democratic cities that are causing the chaos in this country. And they wanted to see a street fighter. It reminds us of why we voted for Trump in 2016.
Well, Scott, see, that's an interesting point of view. I think that's you know, we kind of over-examine, over-analyze when we're looking at this. But Scott, you as supporter of the president, you came out, you enjoyed it. You thought you were excited about it. I think you are right. Chris Wallace, to put it in terms, put himself over, was trying to become the star.
He was trying to become the
person in the middle of the show. I do feel like that happened multiple times where even the reacting or laughing or making fun of a candidate's response, I thought that was inappropriate. And you're right. He did not fade into the background, somewhat because obviously it broke into chaos and he was trying to figure out what to do. But this is a guy who's known for his gotcha questions and interviews. And what really disappointed me with Chris Wallace, you know, reading no one's read these questions. Maybe someone should have, Chris Wallace, because you didn't ask a whole lot of substance. And that was really deeply disappointing, is we had one opportunity for the first presidential debate. Who knows if there'll be another two debates? I think they're obviously scheduled right now, but there's a lot of discussion at the end whether that was going to be it for it because it was so chaotic. But you had your first opportunity to see these guys go head-to-head, and you didn't even ask questions of true substance.
Well, and to your point as well, Chris Wallace, before the debates, had put out there, like, I want to be invisible, exactly what our caller was just talking about. I don't want to be noticed. I want it to highlight the two people. Well, his format was awful, frankly.
Oh, yeah.
It was 2 minutes of uninterrupted, then a kind of
vague,
generic, vague
open discussion,
which made no sense. That was all up to him. It was a subjective open discussion, because when he decided he didn't like the angle of, quote, open discussion, he would take it back from the people. And a lot of times, that was when President Trump started to go on the offensive against Joe Biden. But to be fair, he did cut off Joe Biden many times as well, said give the president his 2 minutes. But that was when he lost total control.
Yeah, there were no rules.
I think that was his flaw, was the way he designed the debate. It was more than just, we know that he asked the gotcha questions a lot, and we know that he has a different sort of bias or
it's designed,
self-worldview.
Yeah, yeah. It's designed for ratings. It's designed for people to watch and enjoy it. And I think people thought what they wanted was a fiery, chaotic battle one-on-one. I don't think that's what the American people really wanted. What we wanted was substance. And you can have a fiery and exciting and tough debate while actually discussing the real issues. That's why I thought the Law and Order segment, that whole 10 minutes or so where they went back and forth, again, whether you agree with President Trump or Joe Biden, I thought there was some substance there. They at least expressed their opinions well. But other than that, it was pretty rough. I know we have some comments from there, but let's go ahead before we'll talk about that in a later segment. Let's take some phone calls. A lot of you guys have been holding for a long time. Let's go to Roberta in Colorado, line one.
Hi.
Hey. Welcome.
Am I on?
You are on.
I want to say you guys have covered it all, everything I had to say. The disrespect from Chris Wallace toward the president To me, it's there, and maybe that's the way they planned it, so there wouldn't be any more debates, because you completely changed what I was going to say, but you have covered it perfectly.
Well, thank you.
I thought it was sad that they were behaving like ninth grade boys fighting over a girl.
Yeah, it had that feeling. It had a feeling of, it was definitely personal.
That's what they wanted, so that there wouldn't be any more debates. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe so. Well, what do you think about that theory?
Well, I think that if there are no more debates, what we'll see is the Biden campaign try to capitalize on the narrative post-debate. And we know that Nancy Pelosi was already kind of floating that narrative, like he shouldn't debate with him. He shouldn't, legitimize the president with a conversation. So I could see the Biden campaign trying to capitalize.
I think there needs to be another debate.
I think there shouldn't. I think it should be more structured. I think it should be like the traditional 2 minutes to you, one minute for rebuttal, and then a flip-flop of the questions.
If I was the president, I would only do it with Joe Rogan as the moderator, and I would only do it in a three-hour format. I would do a long-form interview-style format. I really would. I know people will joke around about that. I would do it. I would say Joe Rogan is the number one podcaster in the world, maybe one of the I'd say a guy who is somewhat was a Bernie guy, but also has been a conservative in a lot of issues, a true moderate, and a guy with more influences and more listeners than any of these people have on your local news and your TV channels and your cable news. You're talking about someone who you'd actually get true eyeballs and ears on. And what I really want, and what was really disappointing, is we've talked about whether, I know Joe Biden wanted three breaks. I do think it would have been helpful if there was a break, to go to the restroom somewhere in this thing. But I also think it would help if it was double the amount of time.
And this is a comment in from Facebook. Okay. This is from Richard, and he says, not to be a contrarian, but what I was watching showed the president could not stop interrupting.
Yep.
And here's what's interesting. And this goes back to what I was saying about it's kind of a perfect picture of a perfect picture of our society right now, that if you have kind of a predisposed side, you're seeing more the good as opposed to the other. And Richard, that was what was so surprising to me, because I probably would have said President Trump was very aggressive. He did jump in. He tried to push on certain issues.
Maybe a little too much.
But when I went back, because I watched it once and then listened to the whole thing to cut up bites for the show today. So I watched 3 hours of this debate last night. Yeah. And what I saw was it was very much Joe Biden. It was a strategy.
Yeah.
He started early and he was going very specifically. And he actually went pretty negative first. He called him a clown. He said, "Will you shut up?" When the president had open time. And then that's when it was like the president was like, "Okay, you know what? If this is how we're going to be, I'm better at this than you. This is my wheelhouse. Yeah. If you want to go just slinging at each other and who can win, I'm going to outdo you in this." And he did. But I think that it was tactical by the Biden campaign, because they started that entire narrative early in the debate when it was pretty peaceful and dull to some degree. The first 10 minutes was just very stoic.
We have a ton of phone calls still coming in. That's at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to keep discussing the debate. We're also going to discuss a few other topics here and there, but I think we're going to stick to the debate for the most part. Play some clips, take your phone calls. And for those that lose us, who don't have us for the full hour of Jay Sekulow Live, this is the Logan Sekulow Reprogram. Will and I do this each and every day. You can find it on YouTube, youtube.com/Logan Sekulow Reprogram. Just look for my channel and subscribe, Logan Sekulow. Again, we do it each and every afternoon. We'd love to have you along with us, or join the Logan Sekulow Reprogram Facebook group. We'll be right back with more on this very special takeover debate analysis of Jay Sekulow Live. We'll be right back.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Fight for the right to live in freedom.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Logan Sekulow.
Welcome back to the Logan Sekulow Reprogram Takeover at Jay Sekulow Live. If you were watching on Facebook, you saw a promo for Bald Beagle. That's our brand new Bald Beagle with a B, baldbeagle.com. Ours our new YouTube channel for kids. It's American history, and we are deep into production thanks to the supporters of Bald Beagle, which is a direct project of the ACLJ. So when you support the work of the ACLJ, that helps us. But you can also directly, you know, direct your funds to Bald Beagle through baldbeagle.com. We appreciate it. We've just completed production on our first video. It should be coming up in the next few weeks at the latest, if not sooner. It is really fun. Again, it's educational American history lessons for your kids and your grandkids in a fun and entertaining way. And I look forward to sharing it all with you very, very soon. We appreciate the support and the continued support to make these high-quality videos to help supplement whether you're homeschooling or whether your kids are at home, whether your kids aren't getting the American history lessons that they should be in their school, or for you adults like me who maybe need these, want to be able to put some rhymes to some of the facts, Will, just like Schoolhouse Rock days, where you can remember some of those classic things that we all still sing. We the people, in order to form a more perfect
union. Can you give a little bit of a tease what the first one is?
Yeah, the first one is on George Washington, and it's a dance song. So it's a fun song for kids, but it's packed with facts that hopefully will be easy to remember. Your kids can recall and repeat back. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, though, Will, quickly in this segment. Let's go to Mary Ellen, right?
Mary Ellen from Illinois on line 3. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live and the Reprogram Takeover. You're on the air.
And thank you for welcoming me. Congratulations on your show, too.
Thank you.
I have maybe a little different view. I agree with everything that's actually said. However, in reflecting on President Trump's prior talks, for instance, the ones that I knew that he hit it, the ball out of the park, like in Mount Rushmore in the last State of the Union.
Yes.
I felt the president didn't really prepare like he does before those, because I felt there were times when he could have added some facts that we know.
Yeah.
And he's speaking. I think the point of these debates is to turn the hearts of the undecided. And I felt most of what he said was like for the base.
Yeah, Mary Ellen, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think there was substance missing from this entire debate. There was a lot of cutoffs and gotchas and jokes and moments and, you know, like they said, a fiery response. But it was missing some of those moments, even in some of the stuff that definitely more the gotcha questions. We know, like a lot of you who are listening right now, like I said, you've watched the State of the Union. You've watched the Mount Rushmore speech. You remember some of those facts and figures that he's presented before, and they were missing.
Well, and I think the president's goal last night wasn't necessarily to highlight his record, maybe because of those speeches. However, what he was more going for was trying to contrast the image that Joe Biden tries to put forward of himself with some of the other parts of his party, the Democrat Party, and really draw that out. We saw that. We can get into it in the next segment about law enforcement. He also tried to bring up some of the voting record of Joe Biden, him being in 47 years and not being able to accomplish things. So there was, I think it was more pushing like, oh, are you with the left base or are you this creature of Washington?
There was a lot of just say it, you need to say it. No, you can't say it. I won't say it. You need to say this. How do you feel about Amy Barrett? I'm not going to say it. You're going to say it. It was a lot of that. And that's honestly was my big takeaway and negative. And when I have to look at it, I think you have to look at it now. I don't think we walk away from this debate saying, you know, there was a home run. It wasn't, you know, exactly what we wanted. From a debate in general, not just from a conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat. But I do have to think, as a lot of our listeners are Christians, a lot of our listeners are conservatives, you do want to look at it and go, okay, well, if this is going to erupt into chaos, who represents the policies that you support? And I think, look, we can't tell you who to vote for or even who we're voting for. But I will tell you that it is very difficult for me to get behind some of the chaos that is ensuing in the streets. And it's very hard for me to get behind someone who is not pro-life. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
To the Logan Sekulow Reprogram here on Jay Sekulow Live today. We have a ton of calls. We'll take a lot of those in the next segment. So I know a lot of you have been holding for a long time. We'll try to get through as many as possible. But just like the debate, I would hope we would have more substance. So, Will, I think we need to talk a little bit more about some of the good that came out of this. Again, and at least some of the real meat of the scenarios, not the gotcha questions. We want to talk a bit about the 10 minutes or so that I said when we were texting back and forth. These are the moments that I hope get replayed. And this was all on the president. Obviously, he's been pitching a law and order point of view. This is obviously a response.
He ran in 2016.
Yeah. And a lot of this is, though, the direct stuff, a lot of it was in response to what's been happening in the streets of America, whether it's the protests, the riots, the destruction. And when you go back and forth, and I think we should play some of this, Will, and you hear the difference of point of view, I think it's pretty stark.
Yeah, and this is Byte 40. The president, and this was in that open discussion portion, but it was also towards the end of the debate when they were more lively jabbing back and forth. But yeah, the president was trying to get Joe Biden to respond to a question about law enforcement support of your candidacy. So let's go ahead and play Byte 40.
That's not what they're talking about, Chris. He's talking about defunding the police.
That is not true.
He doesn't have any law. He has no law enforcement.
That's
support.
Not true.
Almost
that's
nothing.
Not, that, look,
really, who do you have? Name one group that supports you. Name one group that came out and supported you. Go ahead.
Look,
think. We have time.
We don't have time to do anything.
No, think about it.
Name one law enforcement group.
That came
I
out
think,
and
I
supported
think, gentlemen,
you.
I think I'm going to take back the
there
moderator's
aren't.
Role.
I don't think there
and
are
I want,
any.
And I want to get.
Thanks, Chris Wallace. Good time to interrupt. You know, that's where it does. Look, I got to say it. This is where you do watch it and go, this is one side against the other, and it's
right.
Two on one.
Right.
Because that was a moment, an actual debate moment. By the way, if anyone's ever been in high school debate, college debate, you ever been in debate class, those are the moments you're looking for, which is, can you get them on something? Which the president had it backed into a corner because he said, is there one police organization, law enforcement organizations that have showed their support for you? And he couldn't name one. And we don't have time.
Instead of the moderator then
immediately
saying,
Chris Wallace go, I'm taking it
respond?
Back.
Right.
I'm taking this back. I have the microphone. I'm the star here. You know, enough with this. Enough with this crap. This is when you watch this and have to go, I can't take it anymore. All of it is chaos. This thing erupted into chaos, and it was the plan the whole time. Whether you like it or not, again, I think you have to start looking at what the words are actually being spoken and where you line up as a human being. Right, Will?
That's right.
I mean, that one ticked me off.
There's not much else to
say. I think they
edited,
they ended that clip specifically knowing that it would trigger.
I cut it up for you.
You're like, this will trigger Logan here at the end because Chris Wallace, I'm taking back my job. You gave up your job? You, Chris Wallace, you're like, for a minute, I'll let him flounder out there. But I'm going to, before Joe Biden completely embarrasses himself and proves that he is out there saying stuff that is completely against what most people think. Most people, by the way, I truly believe, and I would hope, do want some kind of law enforcement in their society. Am I the biggest, proponent of all of it? No, I'm not going to go out there and be like, I think there's all good. I'm not that guy. But I do think that there is a lot of America who is scared, a lot of America that wants more enforcement, that sees some of these top cities burning that are not responding. And when they see such a direct response and such a yin and yang of this situation, that they have to see the light in some way.
Well, also, you mentioned the law and order and how people see this happening in the cities.
I know where you're going.
But there was a moment that brought up about Antifa.
Uh-huh.
And now that's something that a lot of people talk about and are concerned about.
Yeah.
But this there's a very specific moment of this bite that I want to bring back because it reminds me of something else from the Obama-Biden administration that I want to bring up. So let's go ahead and play Bite 42.
Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a left-wing.
FBI director.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacist. Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not malicious. That's what FBI director said.
Well, then you know what?
We're done, sir.
The fact that Joe Biden is trying to drill down on Antifa is an idea.
Yeah, it's just a thought.
Not an organization. That reminds me.
Is that a good idea?
That's what
it sounds like
idea.
You're saying. You're saying, like, it's just an idea. There are no bad ideas.
But 10 years ago, this was May 26th of 2010, John Brennan, he gave a speech talking about the president, President Obama at the time, his worldview about the war on terror, things that we were fighting. We were fighting wars at this time in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it was a direct relation of the terror attacks on the United States in 9/11. And he said this, the president's strategy is absolutely clear about the threat we face. Our enemy is not terrorism because terrorism is but a tactic. Our enemy is not terror because terror is a state of mind. Does that language remind you of anything? It reminds me of Joe Biden saying Antifa is an idea, right? Not an organization.
Right, those are calculated lines.
They have these very philosophical ideas about threats.
Are you
people are
trying
are
to get the
cities down.
Are you trying to get the Antifa vote? I mean, that's the weird part. Like, what's the point? Like, what's the benefit of, like, why does that come up in a conversation? He didn't say, is Antifa real?
I think
he
Antifa willingly has to vote absentee.
Yeah.
Because they're going to each city unloading the U-Haul.
Yeah,
so
I've seen the
they
the
probably plates. Requested their mail-in ballots already.
It's insane. It's insanity. And folks, this is the thing. I did a folks. That was a Jay Sekulow reference. Then when you look at this in a big picture, I think we can all get and we're going to take a lot of calls in the next segment. We all can get pretty disheartened. You can watch the debate unfold and feel chaos inside of you. You can feel stress. There were moments that I was not thrilled with on both sides. There are moments that I feel like that we may be able to pinpoint if an election goes one way or the other. Were moments that people either turned off the TV or lost interest. And we've played many of those today, and there's a lot more. But I want to take your phone calls in the next segment because I think it's important to hear from the American people and what they have to say. And here's what I'll have to say. When I look at it in the big picture, and I've thought this, honestly, my whole political voting life, which is that no one is perfect. There is no perfect candidate. At the end of the day, these are two men who are both, one's been in politics and one has been in business. They've both been through a lot the last year. The chaotic mess of the debate kind of summarizes how we've all felt this year. So look at policy and look where your faith and where your opinions match up. And I think that's what's important. It's not about supporting a Republican or a Democrat, but it is supporting essentially at this point, if you're disheartened, if you watch that debate, like I think a lot of people probably did and said, I'm not going to vote. I'm not getting out there and voting. I'm done. Which I am afraid of, honestly, after watching that, there are a lot of people who were those millions and millions of people who don't vote, who watched that and said, I'm not interested. Tune out, not voting. I think you have to look beyond the person at this point, Will. I think you have to look to the person and then to the policy. And really, does that policy match up with your worldview? I know personally, it would be very difficult for me. And look, there are other candidates than President Trump. There's Kanye West. I know the people left. There's a lot of other people on the ballot who are pro-life. It would be very difficult for me personally to ever rationalize voting for someone who is as aggressively pro-choice. And that didn't come up in the debate. And honestly, that was a big bummer for me. It came up very briefly early on when they talked about Amy Barrett, and she said she wants to maybe overturn Roe versus Wade. And then the president's response was even like, well, you don't know what she's going to think. Well, I didn't also, love any of that.
He said it wasn't on the ballot. The president was saying that's not on the ballot. Yeah. And he's like, well, it is because you're Supreme Court nominee. It was very convoluted. But
I want it on the ballot. I mean, that's the truth.
It was Biden trying to basically say that, trying to conflate two different issues and say that, no, it is on the ballot, even though voting for Joe Biden wouldn't necessarily, if that were theoretical, that that's what's going to happen, that's not what you were voting for in November. That has nothing to do with it. Two separate issues.
Right. And it is two separate issues, but I wish they had gotten to it. I wish they had talked about it more. I wish they had brought up stuff like the Ralph Northam situation and the infanticide that's happening. Those are important issues that I think, sadly, due to the failure of Chris Wallace, didn't come up. It didn't become discussion points. Things that I really feel passionately about, and I sat there for an hour and a half waiting for them, and instead all it was theoretical questions. Say you deny this. Say you like this. Do you have any police force? It just goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, with no real meat to the discussion on issues that are important, specifically to people like you who listen to our show and have been passionate about the issues that we discuss here every day. And I think last week when you had someone like Amy Barrett, there was a lot of hope that this would become a talking point. I wish the president had gone deeper into that and said, you know what? We're supporting a big portion of the country that believes that abortion is murder. We are trying to put forth a plan for them. And as a voter, again, like I said, I can't participate. You lose me completely when that becomes one of your, especially your top talking points. He mentioned overturning Roe versus Wade, Joe Biden did, within the first 15 minutes. Sorry, you lost me. Not saying I'm voting for Donald Trump. Not saying I'm voting for Joe Biden. What I tell you with, I cannot see myself. It'd be a lot of chaos would have to ensue for me to ever cast a ballot. And I feel like that should be for most Christians out there, to support someone who's pro-choice. As aggressively as they are. Not a life of the mother and the exceptions. Someone who is leaving a baby dead on the table. Just how I feel. And it really upset me that they really didn't get into that kind of discussion or any of that meat in this debate. We're going to be taking your phone calls when we get back. I want to hear what you have to say. I'm not taking the moderator's chair back like Chris Wallace did. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
Welcome back. Let's wrap up this Logan Secular Reprogram Takeover Strong with your listener calls and comments. Will, let's start off with Linda. She's been holding a long time. Linda, thank you for holding and listening to us monologue through the day. Linda in Kentucky, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for all you do on behalf of the American people.
Thank you.
Listen, I've watched politics for a long time. I've seen a lot of presidents come and go, and I've seen many debates. Last night, as some have already said, I nearly turned it off and almost teared up, actually. I thought it was a complete, utter disaster. I saw bias in Wallace. I watched former Vice President Biden give out false information and lied, and I felt really bad for our current president not being able to hit key points. And so I guess in essence what I'm trying to say is I would like to see the debate structure change. I think it should be a minimum of 2 hours long, 30 minutes for each topic, four topics, and give each candidate a 15-minute platform to articulate a response. There was no rebuttal last night. And the president, yes, he interrupted quite often. I felt that he made some key points, and one of the ones that I think is going to stick out for me, as well as voters, is I've done more in 47 months than you've done in 47 years.
Yeah, Linda, there's a famous meme that's been going around that, you know, Joe Biden has been an elected official and been in politics for 20% of the entire timeline of our country, of the United States of America. And when you look at his record, I would agree with you. Linda, I really agree with you in terms of debate format. I think that we live in a long-form society. We live in a world where people listen to a lot of long-form podcasts and radio shows that go on 3, 4, 5. We're accustomed to that at that point. This point, we're accustomed to long-form educational entertainment, if you will. And I think that that is an important part of this, is that I feel like it's a broken model. It's a model that feels very much of a time when TV would go off at 9 o'clock at night. They play the national anthem. You know, that's what it feels like. It feels like a bygone era. And there's some of that that's nice because there's tradition, but I think somewhat the tradition does need to change. If you're going to have conversations like this, that there's not enough time. 90 minutes is just simply not enough time to have any real debate. And I agree with her.
I do too. Especially, she brought up there was no rebuttal. And I think that was a little bit what kept tripping up both the candidates.
Yeah, they wanted to respond.
They've gone through all these debates where if someone mentions you or does a direct attack,
you're allowed to
at least get 30 seconds to respond. Yeah. And so they were trying to do that just naturally. It was reflexive. And the moderator, in most cases, except for a few times, he decided to let Joe Biden go ahead. They wouldn't allow the rebuttal or the response when there was a direct attack. Sometimes falsely direct attacking the other opponent. And so I think that was a very big issue that really drug down the debate and just caused it to turn into the fighting and the bickering because they were just trying to retort. And that's natural in a debate.
For sure. Let's keep going because we only got a few minutes and we got a lot of calls. Let's go next to Mary, who's calling in Texas. Mary, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes. My comments are kind of in the same line, but I have a little bit different take.
Okay.
I think President Trump needs to expect that the format will be against him. And I think it's even going to be worse in the next two debates. But he has got to stay on point. I mean, I had a lot of Democrat friends and family members, you know, forced them to watch the debate so that they could learn what his program was, his accomplishments that they don't hear on MSNBC and CNN and ABC, you know, and all the Democrat networks. But he was so combative, he couldn't stay on point.
Right. Right. And those facts just didn't happen. A lot of them didn't get out there. I agree with you on that, I wish he would have highlighted more of the positive instead of just being on the attack. I think there is a defensive situation there, Will, when immediately you are under attack.
Right.
And he's good at that. He's good at hitting back typically.
And he's been on the defensive for 4 years because before he was even elected, they were using the FBI to investigate him.
So. Right. So this is a guy who, like I said, didn't really feel like your typical incumbent president, but he hasn't felt like our typical president to begin with because he's someone who's been under attack his entire run. You know, there's been no real peace. I told you, Will, when we were doing this show, it always feels like we're in an election cycle now. It's not like it used to be where we did a show or we do a year on the election and then we kind of go back into our normal, you know, everyday life. Now, some of that has to do with obviously our connections and the guests we're able to have on and all that. But some of it has to do mainly with the fact that this has been an ongoing situation for 6 years. Let's hit the phone still. We're going to try to get through and we only got 3 minutes. Let's go to who's been on hold the longest, Marsha on line one. Marsha, welcome. Quickly, you're on the air and thank you for holding.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Logan. I appreciate it. I just wanted to point out that it seems to be okay with everybody for Biden to just say, oh, look, Trump has done absolutely nothing, and me, I'm going to do absolutely everything. And that they just let him get away with it. He doesn't make any points on either side.
Yeah, there was a lot of hypotheticals. There was a lot of, you know, theoretically, if this was to happen, this is how I may respond. If the coronavirus had happened while I was president, this is maybe how I would have done it better. And you know what? They kind of let him slide. They talk about they brought up early on, Will, the fact that Joe Biden and Pelosi and all were dancing in Chinatown and wanting that whole deal to not, you know, close off to try to keep the virus at bay. And Chris Wallace would not really respond to that. And I really would have loved to have seen a direct response from Joe Biden. Instead, it was just a, come on, man.
There were a lot of words and techniques that we've discussed on the reprogram before that when you call someone a racist or if you call them a liar, it shuts down debate. And Biden was using those rhetorical devices constantly. Yeah. He said, you've done nothing but lie. You are a racist. Yeah. You are he said, shut up, man. You're a clown. When you start using those attacks directly.
No longer a debate.
How do you expect there to be a civil conversation after that?
Right. Exactly. Moving on. Let's go. Terry, Florida, line four. Terry, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say, and I didn't hear anybody talk about it. There was a time when Chris Wallace directly asked Joe Biden, should we vote for him? And he couldn't give an answer. He gave four reasons not to vote for Trump. Yep. When you can't give the American people a reason to vote for you, that says everything. And I'm surprised nobody noticed that.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he didn't prep for that one question. He didn't prep for why people should vote for him. I think a lot of it is betting on the fact that trying to be the alternative to Trump and going, you hate all of this, you'll love me.
Well, and a lot of times when you see an election that is purely trying to be a referendum on someone, mm-hmm. when it is all about the incumbent and not about the candidate himself or herself, what you end up seeing is that's almost like the no news is bad news or all news is good news kind of situation where if the focus is primarily on the incumbent, and that's all, even your negative attention elevates them in the conversation. And that could be a tactical error for the Biden campaign.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to the Logan Sekulow reprogram today. It has been a wild one, and we appreciate it, you know, covering your debate. If you're watching this on a replay, even comment below. Tell us your feelings and your thoughts on the debate. Make the social media team work. Come on, sorry. Y'all got to go through and keep working. But I appreciate everyone who listens. Thank you so much. Thanks for dealing with these takeovers. It was a lot of fun for us. Hope it's fun for you. Catch Will and I each and every day on the Logan Sekulow Reprogram. Find it on YouTube. You can find it on your Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. And then check out the work we're doing with Bald Beagle, the new YouTube channel for kids. It's baldbeagle.com. Until next time. And as always, if you see a storm a brewing in your life, don't worry. Give it 5 minutes. Give it 10 minutes. Give it 15 minutes. Because it'll pass.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.